listen to the stories of Tinseltown. We got a new song, and yes we do. So come on days, and come on months, and all you others too. Listen to the stories of Tinseltown. They're not only good, they're true. True stories of Tinseltown. Ooh, ooh.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another True Stories of Tinseltown. I'm sorry I haven't been getting these out. I do have a couple that have to go, and the love stuff I've been doing with April VVA, she's having some stuff she has to deal with, so we'll get back to that. And today, though, I am thrilled. I have my friend and often co-host, John DeLeo, on. Hiya, John.
Hey, Grace, how you doing?
I'm doing good, and I love having you on, and we just love talking our movies, and John has written about movies, done everything about movies. He's movies, and he's even working on another book, and that'll hopefully be coming out next year. And how are you doing, John?
I'm doing okay, you know, like we all are in our own unique way of experiencing what's been going on in our world and our country and our towns and wherever we are.
Right.
Day, one day at a time, dealing with the things that are particular to us as we sort of march on.
That's all we can do. And we march on until we don't. Kaboom,
yeah,
right?
I guess so, yes.
Well, that's true. Anyway, today John and I are doing a show about movies we think you guys would really like, but are perhaps obscure or you get turned off by the name. And I know a couple that I chose probably aren't on anyone's radar because I don't think they're out on DVD or anywhere like that. So, and John has some great choices. And how about you starting, John?
Well, when you suggested this idea, I told you I actually wrote a book with sort of this concept in 2007. It came out called Screensavers, 40 Remarkable Movies Awaiting Rediscovery. And I did 8 chapters, 5 movies apiece by genre, and went from the silence to the late 90s. And movies, as you said, that I think people would like if they really had someone to give them a nudge and say you should watch this.
Can I just stop you for a minute, John? Can I? Because I'd love to read that book. Can I still get that book?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, it's on Amazon. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm like all my stuff is still in print. So, yeah, it's just you just plug in books, plug in screensavers and I guess there'll be a lot of books about the actual subject of screensavers, but
eventually you
come to mind.
And I follow you
on my name.
Amazon.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I know, I can D-I-L-E-O.
Capital L-E-O.
Right.
Yeah, J-O-H-N.
Well, I always link you up anyway so people can check out your books because I love them.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So that was the gist of that. So, I mean, I was thinking along those lines a while back where it's like, how can I get them all my recommendations in one thing? And I guess that's what led to that book. And so one of them, to get this ball rolling, is from my comedy chapter. And it's called It Started with Eve from 1941. And, of course, the problem with getting to know all those delightful screwball comedies and romantic comedies of that era is the fact that there are so many of them. There's a countless number of them. And it's so easy for some really good ones to get lost in the shuffle. And I'd say, you know, It Started with Eve is not in the league of, say, The Lady Eve or It Happened One Night or, you know, some of the greatest of them. The Preston Sturges movies, as I said, Lady Eve, but also Palm Beach Story and Hail the Conquering Hero or the Lubitsch comedies or the Howard Hawks ones. But anyway, if there's a second tier, It Started with Eve would be one of the very best of that next group. That sort of almost classics. And it stars Deanna Durbin, and I'd say it's the best movie she ever appeared in. And it's not really a musical. She does sing a couple of times, but it's essentially a very clever romantic comedy scripted by Norman Krasner and directed by Henry Costa. And it's got the delightful premises. I'll give it to you quick. Charles Lawton is a dying millionaire. His son is Robert Cummings. And sort of for his father's final night, he'd love to have him meet his fiancée, but he can't find her in time. So he just grabs the first girl he can find, who works in a hotel, Deanna Durbin. He pays her $50 to come over to the mansion with him. Say you're my fiancée. It doesn't matter because he's going to die that night anyway, so we'll make him die happy. He's delighted by her. Of course, he doesn't die. And the first thing he wants to do is spend more time with Deanna Durbin. So now what? When there is a fiance.
Oh, there really is a fiance.
There is a fiance, yes. And she's not like happy about this. Yes.
Who plays the fiance?
It's Margaret Talashay, who was actually Mrs. William Wyler.
Oh, wow.
Who wasn't in too many things. But anyway, we're not supposed to like her anyway, of course.
I figured she'd be like a boo hiss.
Yeah, we're rooting for Deanna.
Yes, of course.
And it's very clever, and it keeps sort of raising the ante, raising the stakes on how they keep this thing going. Charles Lawton, who you would appear to be sort of slumming, I mean, it's only 2 years after The Hunchback, so it's like, now I'm in a Deanna Durbin comedy, but he really seems to be having a ball, and he's quite delightful, and he's wearing age makeup, so he's enjoying the whole character actor thing, and Robert Cummings is, you know, totally charming and delightful, and really, Deanna Durbin, she's sort of a woman now, so she's out of the teenage thing, and she's really a, you know, very nice, easygoing, light comedian. And so whenever I recommend this, people are always pleased with it because, like I said, it just makes you feel good. And maybe at this point in 2020, there's no better recommendation for anything than saying it makes you feel good. So
I agree. And I tried to find it. You know where I did find it? DVD with, like, it's like four movies of Deanna Durbin.
Oh, okay.
And I was trying to find it on Amazon Prime so I could watch it, but I didn't. But you got me sold. I read the premise. I read the whole thing. This is one of the films that I haven't seen that we're going to be talking about. And it just sounds fun. It sounds like a nice film. And you know, I'm glad it's not too much music because musicals are not my favorite genre.
Yeah. And, no, it's not a musical.
Yeah. Did you ever see her in drama in that movie, Christmas Eve Night? Is that the name of it?
It's Christmas Holiday with Gene Kelly.
And what is her name? I love her. Who plays his mother. And she was she was in so many movies. She was in The Letter as the Oriental Woman. This is killing me. I can't think of her name.
Gail Sondergaard?
Yes, she played.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
She was great.
I forgot she's in that.
Yeah.
But, that's an interesting one because they're both musical stars in a film noir together, and it would be striking enough if one of them was in it, but it's the two of them.
So that's a good movie. It's also dark. So this is the one you're talking about I really like to see. And I am going to seek and I shall find it. I am determined because I love Charles Lawton. I think she was great in that movie. I really, you know, have not seen a lot of movies. And I just wrote about her this week on my Facebook page about Hedda Hopper. Did you hear the story about Joseph Cotten and Deanna were supposed to be making out in a car? And Joseph's married and Deanna is like, you know, sweetheart of America.
Yeah.
And Hedda puts it out there. And then they go to the thing, Hedda Hopper's there. And he says, next time I see Hedda Hopper, I'm going to kick her in her butt. And he literally does, or pulls a seat out from her or does something. And no one does that to Hedda. But the next day he got all these flowers and congratulations and said, wish I had the nerve. He got major props from doing that. And but I don't think his wife is congratulating him. I don't think so. But our little Deanna and Joseph Cotten, who'd have thought? And he's in another one of the movies you're going to talk about, which is interesting. Any more on this?
No, let's go to your number one.
There's so many, and I didn't know which one to put as a number one. So I think I'm going to put, this is a really obscure, really hard to find movie. I got this, I had this weird company that sent you like VHS tapes for a buck.
Yeah.
And it's called The Strange Affairs of Uncle Harry. Have you seen this one?
I have seen this one, and fairly recently for the first time. So when you said that you were going to use it, I was like, well, I'm ready.
Because that is a very interesting film. And it, I don't really get the Uncle Harry thing. I think it had a different name in the beginning, but I don't know what it was supposed to be. It was made in 1945, and it stars George Sanders in a role totally uncharacteristic of his roles that he usually plays, or what it seems like George is in real life. Also, Geraldine Fitzgerald, she's wonderful. Moina McGill, who is Angela Lansbury's mother. Ella Raines and Sarah Elgood as their maid, who's walking around with her little, her foo-foo slippers on all the time. It's very, she's really good, and it's well cast. But it's about a guy. I mean, it's not a feel-good movie, but kind of feel-good movie, you know, because it's not horrible at the end. Anyway, Harry, they're from a family that, like, founded this Massachusetts town. One of their relatives is in the town square. But they lost all their money in the Depression, in the crash. And all they had left was this big house they all live in. Harry lives with his sisters. He's got, I don't know, how old do you think he's supposed to be? 38, 40?
It's probably, everyone's always younger than they're supposed to. I mean, he's probably supposed to be 30, but we would think he was 40, but yeah.
Let's go 35.
Okay, yeah, fine.
And is Nettie supposed to be his older sister or his younger sister?
Well, I guess it's, my impression was it was like Moina, George, and Geraldine in that order. But yeah.
So Harry has to work at a factory, and he designs little prints, little things you put on fabric for clothes and things like that. And he hates it. It's dreary, blah, blah, blah. And his life is basically just humdrum. He does it, then he goes home, and Nettie, I guess she had a heart scare. This is Geraldine Fitzgerald, who I've never seen her play a role like this before. She was really disgustingly horrible. But she's Letty, the younger sister, who has a very disgusting obsession with her brother, to say the least. And he comes home, and she just sits in, and this heart thing, you know, has never recurred. But she's like playing Camille and just using it to her benefit to really, you know, suck Harry in. And Moina, who plays the older sister, is really good in this role. And she's on to Nettie's game, and they fight a lot. Anyway, George's life is very lonely. All of a sudden, this lovely Ella Raines comes in, and she's from New York, and she does designing and things like that. And she decides to stay in that town and work, and she can, you know, go for somehow, you know, work and still do her New York work, but work there. And Harry and she fall in love. And Nettie ain't liking this. So they want to meet Deborah. This is her name. She's sophisticated. She's a New Yorker. And she just loves Harry's kindness and gentleness and whatever. She just loves Harry. So they meet on a rainy day, and Letty gets her alone and sort of says, well, maybe you shouldn't have Harry up into your hotel room. People talk. And she said, I hope you don't understand. And she says, I shan't understand. I love this shan't business. And she says, I shan't understand. I shan't misunderstand. Anyway, she tells her, I don't think you should let Harry up into your room. And she said, do you understand? She said, yes, I understand. But anytime Harry wants to come to my room, he's always welcome. Chit-chat. Deborah's on to this Letty. And they fall deeper in love. They finally get engaged. And Letty is furious. And they are supposed to find new homes, the sisters, so that Deborah and Harry can have that home to themselves. And nothing is good enough for Letty. And she pleads with Deborah to let her stay there, and then says, you're no good for him. You're ruining him. He's lonely. He's never supposed to be with anyone. And she dresses so provocatively around Harry. I mean, it's like, you know, I never dressed like that in front of anyone I was in love with. You know, it's just like these lovely flowing gowns with her big bosoms heaving and stuff like that. And so one day they decide they're getting out of there because she can't find a place and they're going to move into Deborah's place in Manhattan. And Letty has another heart thing going on at church. And a little boy comes out and tells him, and then Harry can't leave. And so she said, I'm leaving you, Harry. It's always going to be Letty. I'm getting out of here. You know, this is not, you know, this is a triangle I don't want to be a part of. So she splits. Harry finds out that she just faked it. And it's just this really, what goes on after this when he finds out that she faked it is very interesting. And the ending is one of those that'll give you a, oh my. And they tell you, it's one of those endings where they say, please, for other future people who are going to watch this movie, do not give the ending away. But I liked it.
Well, it's interesting as a time when you couldn't deal with such things to deal with incest, because it, as you said, it gets a little obvious that that's what's happening, not literally, but in the sense of what the feelings are, her attachment to this brother, which is kind of creepy. The ending, it's certainly a twist, and it's a tricky one because you can't really flip back in your mind to how it was triggered exactly. Well, that was vague enough, I hope. So it kind of, I don't know, I guess, I don't know if it plays fair, but I mean, it's certainly a fun ending.
It is.
Yeah. And it's fun to see, like I said, Geraldine Page, who was so sweet in most of her parts, to sort of tear into something that was a little more sort of Ida Lupino than she was used to.
That's a great observation.
I think that was her problem at Warner Brothers, is that they didn't really let her act. And just because she was pretty, they thought she had to be another leading lady. And so they didn't, all those ladies always talk about having to fight for good parts, but with Betty Davis and Ida Lupino already at that studio, I'm sure she felt like they're not going to give me anything of
value. She's going to be the girl's best friend or not exactly the lead woman.
She didn't really last very long, and I'm sure she was probably not very satisfied. And, of course, she had a long career, a lot of it on the stage.
Yes. So I'm
sure she found gratification. I wish I had. I really like her work.
She directed Three Penny Opera. I was about 14 years old, and I wanted to be in theater, whatever. And she was an older woman, but she looked amazing, gray hair. And the woman who played Lottie Lenya was out ill, and Geraldine, it was a musical, she played the part, and she was about 80-something. She was amazing.
Mm.
And you believed it.
Mm.
So yeah, I was really thrilled to be able to see that.
Yeah.
And she was great. She bit her teeth into this. She was horrible. There was nothing nice about her. Nothing at all. And this is the thing that I've seen Moina McGill. I saw her in The Clock, and she had a part.
Well, yeah, she's she's in a number of those movies when she and her daughter first came to America. And I guess as she was pushing Angela, she was sort of part of the deal sometimes. And I guess because Angela was still a teenager,
she
too.
She was a kid.
I think in Uncle Harry, it's probably the most substantial role she had.
Definitely.
Usually she does very small little tidbit roles.
In The Clock, she didn't even speak. It was all pantomime.
Yeah, so this was a real part. Good for her.
Yes. And like I said, Sarah Elgood was great. And this was totally not George Sanders as a role.
Yeah.
Or as a person. Yeah. Did you read his book? He was a cow. Yeah, he was something else. They call, he's something else.
Angela Lansbury liked him a lot. I've heard her talk about him because they made, I think, It was, I think, three movies together.
I think the Scoundrel movie, Dorian Gray.
Yeah, the Samson and Delilah, and Bellamy. Yeah. So he was quite a character, but right, cast. Well, he and Geraldine Fitzgerald both cast against type in this situation. Okay. Shall I go on?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I just want to say, it's not like a feel-good movie like a Deanna Durbin movie, but it's an interesting look at the subject of incest at that time. Yeah. And I do not believe it was physical, but it was certainly wanting to be physical on the sister's side. Okay.
Sure.
Numero dos for you.
Well, I guess this wouldn't necessarily sound feel good because it's a movie about an epidemic, a horror movie, Isle of the Dead from 1945, one of the Val Lewton horror movies. And I think it's the best one, even though it's not as famous as Cat People. And we're going to talk about another one later,
right.
I think. But
my
favorite
one
is Isle of the Dead.
Yeah.
And it's one of Boris Karloff's greatest performances.
Yes,
and
it's very good.
Ironically enough, it's about, 12 people in quarantine on a tiny island in Greece in 1912 while a war is going on. And as they're dying one by one, some of them start to believe it's actually the work of something supernatural when it's actually this disease. But they get more and more sort of flipped out, by this what's happening, and they can't explain it. And so they go to the supernatural for answers. And they start to believe in what they call a vervolica, a vampiric spirit. Anyway, Karloff is this general who is very intimidating, and he too starts to sort of unravel. And it's really a fascinating movie in so many ways, mostly because all of the horror is psychological. Everything can be easily explained, but that doesn't mean these people aren't going to sort of lose their mind. And it's actually kind of a subversive movie about religion for the time, and some of the discussions about how they talk about how people deal with terrible things and the things they try to explain them with. And so I think it's a really, yes, it's low budget, it's a B, but it's pretty great.
It is. It's multi-layered, and it also has an interesting character, very Edgar Allan Poe. A woman has, what's the name of that, catalepsy?
Yeah.
And tell everybody what it is.
She sometimes will be believed to be dead in some sort of coma-like state when she's not. So her big fear throughout the movie is being buried alive, where she's just in one of her sort of trances or, one of her comas. And people, especially in this situation, they'll think she's dead and bury her. So, of course, it happens.
That's a pretty spooky part. Very spooky.
Yeah, it's sort of the horror climax. But again, it's all rooted in reality. It's just quite unfortunate, and it just shows how crazy things can get when everyone's on edge at such an extreme. And so this sort of scary movie climax is totally justified. It's Kathleen Emery, the actress who plays that role.
She did a great job. And then there's her beautiful, I don't know, I guess that's her assistant. And that's who they think is this vampire, Boris Karloff.
Yes.
I think she's evil.
Ellen Drew. Yes. Yeah, Ellen Drew plays her, yeah.
And they say she keeps looking healthier and we're all dying and things like that. So, also Boris, why they went to the island was Boris's wife was entombed there. And when he went there, her body was gone.
That's right. It's a cemetery island, right, which already sets things up as a place you don't necessarily want to live.
Right. It's creepy. Very creepy. And the guy that lives there, he has a whole different belief system as well with his statue and what he thinks. So it's like this potpourri of all different thoughts and feelings and paranoia because they're all so close together and then they're just dying one by one. And for some reason, why don't they accept that it's a plague? My goodness. And if they wait until, like they said, there's the wind blows, it will go away. You know, we got to get it off there. But they did not believe it. And that strikes a similar tone for today, if you really want to think about it.
Yeah, sure. But as you said, it's multi-layered and it's much more complex than, you know, a 75-minute B horror movie in black and white, from RKO. So I recommend it highly.
Yeah, Val Lewton was very good. And I got the whole series from a friend of mine, and I've seen all of them. And he also reused a lot of the actors, like Boris Karloff was in Bedlam, and he was in The Body Snatcher. And, you know, he just reused a lot of the actors, maybe just once or twice or whatever, but he did. He was he was a good producer, and he saw what it was. And I like that movie a lot. And it is very atmospheric. It is very claustrophobic and creepy. And Boris is wonderful, going mad. Yeah. He's not Frankenstein's monster. He's a man. No. You may think he's a monster from what he's done in War, but it's a really good film, and I think that's a great choice.
Good.
Anything more on that one?
No. Back to you.
Back to me. Okay. Why don't we talk about I Walked with a Zombie, since we're on the Val Lewton stage.
Exactly.
What I think is people get turned off by the name of this film, I Walked with a Zombie, because you might think it's some stupid, really cheesy zombie movie, but it really is not. It is, they tried to do it, and I can see it, sort of a Jane Eyre kind of thing.
Yeah.
And all the actors are fabulous, and it's a really tight, good story. And it starts out with, where's she from? Canada, I think?
She's from Canada. And
Who is played by the lovely Joel McRae's wife,
Frances D.
Frances D. She's so lovely.
Yeah, she is.
And she doesn't have to meet the guy. Basically, the guy asks her, "Do you believe in witchcraft?" And she just laughs it off and said she sometimes wondered about her nurse's trainer lady. And it was good paying. She didn't have to meet anyone, and she went. So they met in Antigua, and who does she meet but my boyfriend and George Sanders' brother, Tom Conway, who is called the nice George Sanders. And he had some life, too. I really like him. Anyway, and he was in a couple of their films as well, a couple other of Val Lewton's films. Anyway, she meets him, and they're on a boat, and the people are singing, like, I don't know, some slave songs, because they were brought as slaves, to this island. And she's looking at the sea and the stars, and he kind of interrupts her and says, "It's not beautiful, you know. And those little, the stars, you know, is just a sign of all the dead bodies at the bottom of the sea, and the fish are jumping so they don't get eaten by bigger fish." And he's just like a buzzkill. He's just like, "Forget it, Charlie. This is not what you see." Anyway, she gets there, and it's Fort Sebastian. And she is supposed to take care of George Conway? Or my George Sanders, Tom Conway, I'm sorry. I'm mixing the bros. So Tom Conway's wife is in a catatonic state, and she is being cared for, and they need a nurse for her. And she meets Wes, who is his half-brother, and he drinks a lot, and there's big family secrets going on there. Anyway, the first night she hears crying, and she goes into this really weird tower, and she sees Jessica, who is the wife, And she's kind of walking and she's trying to introduce herself to Jessica. And Jessica is this like anorexic in this, you know, sort of Letty from Uncle Harry movie in one of these frocks, right? Why is she always wearing the same outfit? Anyway, Thelma keeps telling her, the lovely Teresa, what is her last name? I love her so much. She was in Babyface.
Teresa Harris, yeah.
Yeah, she's in it, and she's watching her, and she said, I change her every day like a doll. It's like, well, change her into another clothes. I know what you're doing. Anyway, she sees Jessica, and Jessica just comes forward to her in a menacing way, and then Tom Conway calls her, and she leaves. And then she realizes this is not a physical case. This is a mental case. And she meets a doctor, and she meets everybody else. But then she hears that Jessica's a zombie. And she falls in love with Mr. Conway, and she feels that he loves her, so she wants to bring her back to him in any way she can. And so she goes to the voodoo place, and it's a big mistake to do that, and it just becomes this big to do. And the bottom line is that the two brothers, Sir Lancelot, the guy who sings the song, and he was in Return of the Cat People or something.
The brother?
No, one who sings, there was a family, you know, and I didn't know you were here, you know, and the evil woman. So Wesley, the younger brother, falls in love with Jessica, and all these things happen. And that's when Jessica becomes like a zombie. And the nurse and Tom fall in love, but he wants to send her away because he's never seen good love. And it was just cruel. But whatever, they don't believe she's a zombie. Some people believe she's a zombie. The mother, who was played by Vincent Price's wife at the time, who did a couple of Valut shows, she was very good. And she gives a confession that people kind of scoff at. But it is a good film. It's a love story. It's a creepy story. The big, tall zombie dude, oh, my God. His eyes are really like that. Did you know that?
What?
You know the tall, skinny guy, the zombie dude? His eyes were really like that.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen him in anything else.
Well, yeah, I know. He'd only have to be like a tall zombie guy or some kind of monster guy. Poor thing.
The thing I love in this movie is that walk from the house to the voodoo place with those high stalks and the wife in that diaphanous gown blowing in the wind.
That's all she ever wears, people.
It's so gorgeous, and the black and white, and it's so otherworldly.
Oof.
So I think between that and the sort of Jane Eyre stuff, which is fairly unmistakable, which gives some literary weight, those are the things I like. So I like this one, too. I think it's another one of the better in the Val Lewton series, although I guess I like all of them. But
I like all of them as well. But you know what I like? I like Isle of the Dead. And I think the most well-known, of course, is Cat People. But
they all have those, like you said, those sensational titles, which were, I guess, probably part of the agreement. You can do it however you like, but it's got to have some title that will make people want to see it. Regardless of what the actual content is, which was always more serious than the titles. So,
yeah, and this did very well. I Walked with a Zombie did very well. They were very happy with this. It was presented as a B film, but publicity and everything went out, and it made money for them, lots of money for them.
Yeah.
Once people got past thinking it's going to be Bela Lugosi and this just, you know, whatever. This has a story. This has a... it's really good. I enjoy it very much. And I like all the actors in this. I think they do a fabulous job.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to go to one from my chapter in my book on in the chapter on love stories, a movie called Rachel and the Stranger from 1948 with a great trio of stars, Loretta Young. And I mean, she's at her peak. This is the year after The Farmer's Daughter and The Bishop's Wife. And the two guys in it are up and comers, Robert Mitchum and William Holden. And one thing I love about this movie is that you really can't classify it. It's sort of, it's a love story. It's sort of a romantic comedy. It's sort of a Western. It's an adventure film. It's sometimes even kind of a musical. There's enough sort of music in it. It's a backwoods story. It's so many things, and it refuses to just be one of them. And it's a beautiful blend of all those things.
I love this. I really love this movie, and I think everyone should watch this movie too.
The three stars are terrific, and basically, William Holden is a widower who sort of gets Loretta Young as his sort of mail order bride, and they're sort of seven brides for seven brothers-y, and he doesn't really appreciate her as anything more than a sort of a housekeeper.
Well, wasn't and then she buddy, an indentured servant? He bought her from somebody.
Yeah, it's right. It's more complicated than the mail order bride, right. But the impact is sort of the same. Where it's not a love match in any way. He needs someone to help out,
take care of the kid,
and take care of his little boy. And then when his buddy Robert Mitchum comes by and notices her and appreciates everything about her, William Holden suddenly takes notice and becomes very jealous. And so then it's this real, and suddenly he sees her in a whole new way. And so you've got this great rom-com triangle in the center of this, again, movie that has an Indian attack at some point, you know, so it's all kinds of things, but it's essentially about those three great stars and the great chemistry they have in all directions.
They really do. Yeah. And William Holden, how lucky, William Holden and Robert Mitchum fighting over you. They were both gorgeous to the ultimate max at this point, because like you said, they're just up and comings. They're not really huge stars yet. And they were great. And Robert's charming. He treats her like a woman, not like a slave. And then, like you said, William starts seeing her in different eyes because he gets jealous. He gets very jealous.
Yeah.
And they have the little boy.
I don't think the movie, it didn't obviously cause as much of a stir as her other movies of that era. As I said, The Farmer's Daughter, for which she wins the Oscar, The Bishop's Wife, and then after this has Come to the Stable. But it's right in that sort of most fertile period of her sort of, acclaim as a movie actress, even though she'd been a star for so long. But that was her kind of big moment. And this really is part of that, even though, like I said, most people don't know it, which is a shame.
It is a really good movie. And I think some people might get turned off on it because they think it's a Western. And it's really, it's a love story.
Not.
More than, I think, anything, character study, love story. And, because I'm not a Western fan, but this is a really sweet, good movie. She's nobody's fool. She is not some little wimpy woman. Robert Mitchum's fabulous. William Holden's great. The little boy, I don't know his name, but he's really good as well.
Gary Gray.
Yeah,
he's really
good. And it's just a really nice movie. And, I would highly, highly recommend people seeing this one. And please don't think it's a Western where everybody's going to be scalped or anything like that. It's just not like that. It's a really, really nice movie. And Loretta is charming in it, and they all are. It's really good.
Listen to the stories of Tinseltown.